Thank you, Madam Speaker, honourable members, our dear friends in the House and at home. In tabling the 2007 medium-term budget policy statement, we can affirm that economic growth and investment in public services are steadily bringing a better life to millions of our people. We can look back with pride on the course we chose in implementing our reconstruction and development program because we can see the fruits of the new constitutional order we built, of the transformation of policy and service delivery we undertook, of the tough decisions we made, and the dedicated efforts of South Africans from all walks of life who have contributed to our social progress and economic renewal. Today is better than yesterday, and tomorrow will be even better than today. Honourable members, we can assert this confidently because our progress is recorded and measured, and the facts speak louder than any rhetorical flourishes. Yet the message of today's budget statement is not that we have reached our destination or that victory can already be claimed. It is that we have advanced to new challenges and another phase in our transformation journey still lies ahead. The 2007 community survey released by Stats SA last week tells a story of steady progress in public service delivery. In 1996, just over half our people did not have water in their homes. Today, over 88% of our people have access to piped water. In 1996, only 64% of our people lived in formal houses. Today, over 70% enjoy this right. In almost every area of public service delivery, from access to schooling and health care to refuse removal, from electrification to access to computers, from roads and street lights to sports facilities, from telecommunication services to public transport, we can point to steady progress in living standards. But development is also about access to jobs. It's about security of incomes and redressing past inequalities. We can show measured quantitative progress on these fronts, although we clearly still have more work to do in these dimensions of reconstruction and development. So in tabling the 2007 medium-term budget policy statement, Madam Speaker, we also reaffirm our commitment to building a stronger economy, faster job creation, to broadening participation and deepening the quality of social and economic opportunities for all. South Africa is now entering its ninth year of the longest economic upswing since the national accounts have been recorded in this country. National income has risen by 22% per person since 1999, with increases across all income groups. Employment is rising faster than any point since the 1960s. Fixed investment has increased sharply since 2002 by over 10% a year. These are indeed substantial steps towards our medium-term economic goals. Growth of 6% a year or more, an unemployment rate below 14% by 2014, and an aggregate poverty rate half of that recorded in 2004. Our commitment is not just an aspiration towards these targets. Madam Speaker, honourable members, we intend to measure progress step by step in sharing the democratic dividend amongst all of our people. We need to understand, honourable members, that the present buoyancy in our economic growth is partly a consequence of favourable economic conditions. High commodity prices, low interest rates and strong international demand have contributed to the momentum of our income growth and to financing investment through capital inflows. We need to welcome and take advantage of the opportunities of global growth, but we then also need to distinguish temporary prosperity from structural progress. We need to ensure that the windfall gains are wisely invested and surplus resources are set aside for when markets turn against us in times ahead. On the domestic front, our economy remains strong, buoyed by rising investment in productive capacity, higher employment and incomes, strong consumer demand and healthy foreign capital inflows. Last week's announcement of a 37 billion rand investment by the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China in one of our leading banks indicates that international confidence in our economy is high, and perhaps also signals a new place for Africa in the changing patterns of trade and finance flows in the 21st century. So the healthy economic outlook that we are able to table today is of interest not just to our own people, but also in our region and the wider world. We expect the South African economy to grow by 4.9% this year and 4.5% in 2008, before returning to about 5% in the year 2009 and 2010. The outlook is somewhat less positive than it appeared in February. Financial crises in developed markets, global imbalances, high food and oil prices internationally, and slowing growth in the United States of America and other developed countries do cloud the sky. The advent of the subprime mortgage crisis in the United States is further evidence of the interconnectedness of our world, and also a reminder of the fact that we must build up our cushion against global volatility. Our approach to international finance and monetary management has meant an accumulation of over $30 billion in foreign reserves with the South African Reserve Bank, which is itself a considerable strength and also a contribution to greater exchange rate and interest rate stability. In the fiscal stance outlined today, we indicate how the public finances are also contributing to the resilience of the economy in the context of both international uncertainty and the future investment requirements of our own economy. Madam Speaker, in regard to inflation and capacity utilization, we are mindful that more rapid economic progress has itself brought new dimensions to the struggle. In the context of increasing oil and food prices globally, and I want to emphasize that these are global price increases, rising inflation has re-emerged as a policy concern. And our expanding investment spending has run well ahead of our ability to save, contributing to an increased current account deficit on the balance of payments. This highlights the importance of improved productivity and industrial competitiveness as a condition for the further acceleration in growth and employment creation over the decade ahead. The recent increase in CPIX inflation to 6.7% has necessitated steps to curb inflation that have been implemented by the Reserve Bank on the recommendations of the Monetary Policy Committee. Global price trends present an inflation challenge for all economies at this time. Food and commodity prices have increased sharply in recent years. More recently, the depreciation of the US dollar and continued market pressures have increased oil prices to over $90 a barrel, an increase of 23% in just the last 2 months. Now, we must pause and consider the impact of that on an economy like ours, where so many of our people live far from where they work and where the bulk of South Africans are dependent on hydrocarbon fuels to get around. 23% increase in the global price clearly has a very profound impact. The global trends have interacted with our own rapid economic growth, agricultural supply conditions, broader supply pressures and skills deficits to push CPIX above the inflation target this year. The rate of capacity utilization in the economy is very high, and in some sectors, demand pressures are generating higher prices. These price pressures will not abate quickly, yet addressing them and returning to within inflation target range is important for our long-term growth. Higher inflation reduces our competitiveness, undermines the real income of rich and poor households alike, and creates greater uncertainty for the investment decisions of firms. The task of bringing down inflation cannot just be left to the Reserve Bank. Robust investment in capacity is underway, and this will reduce some of the price pressures over time. All actors in the economy have a role to play. In particular, an improvement in the fiscal balance will help to moderate inflation and create space for stronger private sector economic activity. Honourable Members, because we are so determined to make tomorrow better than today, we must carefully analyse our present pattern of growth. For the next 2 years, somewhat slower growth in household spending will be offset by rising private and public investment. Our increased investment has not been matched by a commensurate increase in domestic production or in savings. Rising inflation and a higher current account deficit are signs that both robust economic growth are both signs of robust economic growth, and that we run the risk of not being able to finance that growth into the future. In order to address these imbalances, we need to sharpen our microeconomic policy instruments through lowering the cost of doing business, stepping up our efforts in skills development, increasing trade competitiveness, and investing in infrastructure that will support our economic expansion. To grow rapidly and to sustain that growth, we must increase exports, for they are the source over time of the revenue that must pay for our imports. The prices of gold, platinum and other commodities have risen sharply in recent years, and this has helped us. But we need to take further and more aggressive steps to diversify our trade capacity. Because of its impact on productivity and innovation, trade policy has a central place in promoting competitiveness. Our approach needs to ensure that competition is fostered through tariff simplification and reform, and that incentives for investment and for research and development are appropriately targeted and effectively administered. Public accountability is critical to the success of such initiatives, so we will seek to publish appropriate reviews and assessments of our progress. In addition, both industrial and labour market policies must focus on raising the labour intensity of the economy so that we can create jobs at an even faster pace. Greater progress in channeling young people into jobs has to be central to the policy objectives over the coming years. In all of these things, we face intense international competition. A recent survey of 600 chief executives of multinational companies said a shortage of qualified staff ranked as their biggest concern. No, the survey was not conducted in South Africa. The skill shortage complained about is in Asia. Yes, a region with almost half the world's population is experiencing severe skills constraints. China is battling with severe shortages of lawyers. Kada, there's an opportunity. Major Indian companies are complaining about the shortage of IT professionals. Contrary to common wisdom about the IT epicenter of the world being in India, everywhere companies are experiencing difficulty in finding industrial, commercial and managerial expertise. Last week, the European Union announced its intent to recruit 20 million skilled foreigners over the next two decades. I believe that this kind of parasitic conduct of nations is wrong. But the point we need to debate about South Africa's skill shortages is not whether they exist or not, but how we confront the challenge and deal with it, recognizing that everywhere else in the world they are focused on exactly the same thing. We will continue to place education and skills development at the top of our budget priority list. Building a learning society is partly about improving the quality and content of what goes on in the classroom, but it is also about investment by businesses in their employees, about communities taking ownership and responsibility for their schools, and about how families communicate values and capabilities to their children. I am aware that the negotiations with educator unions on the occupation-specific dispensation have encountered some difficulties. We all know that a better career progression system is needed to retain good teachers, and so efforts to unblock these difficulties must enjoy our full support. And I think it's appropriate in this context that this House pledges support for Minister Pandor in this endeavour. The area of skills development is clearly one in which we will make more progress if we address the institutional and financial barriers that stand in the way of aligning resources with needs. I share with the Minister of Labour a disappointment that financial management has been poor in several of our sector education and training authorities. At the end of last year, our CETAs held over 3.7 billion rand in cash reserves. Effectively, levy income that employers had not utilized to reimburse training expenses or skills development projects that had not yet been implemented. But other parts of our higher and further education system that are ready to expand enrollment and step up their contribution to human investment do not have the financial resources to do so. This, honourable members, surely cannot be correct. And so we have to explore options for improving the integration of our education and training financing arrangements. And we must do it together. For the past 5 years, public spending has increased by an average of 9.4% in real terms. That's 9.4% above inflation. If a comparison is made with expenditure in 1995, it shows that public spending has doubled in real terms since then. High spending has been financed by falling debt service costs and rising tax revenues. We must take account that some of the growth in our revenue is cyclical and related to high commodity prices and this consumption boon. It is incumbent upon us to manage these cyclical revenues quite differently. In this medium-term budget policy statement, we introduce the concept of a structural budget balance. It scares Minister Didiza, who thinks that the word structure doesn't belong there. So sometimes it's also referred to as a cyclically adjusted budget balance. The structural balance attempts to calculate the effects of cyclical revenues on our budget balance. It's not about structural adjustment. That's what you want us to say and agree to. This addition to our box of tools allows us to ensure that public spending is protected, even if conditions worsen. Revenue that is cyclical must be treated differently. To do otherwise, we submit, would be reckless. Some of the cyclical revenue should be spent on things that raise our ability to grow faster in the long term, things such as infrastructure, education, and institutional capacity. It also makes sense to use some of the cyclical revenue to pay off debt or save for future needs. With this in mind, government is proposing to budget for a surplus of about 0.6% of GDP for the next 3 years, so that when economic conditions deteriorate, we have the resources to cushion the economy. When cyclical revenues are removed from our calculations, the structural budget balance indicates a deficit that will rise to about 1% of GDP in the fiscal year that ends on the 31st of March 2011. The tax burden on the economy has risen since 2004, mainly due to cyclical windfalls accrued as a result of higher consumption and commodity prices. Rising employment and higher salary increases have also led to a rise in tax revenue. This year, we project to collect about 8.5 billion rand more than what we budgeted in February, mainly due to high inflation and related salary increases. I want to just remind this House that in previous years, we've always collected substantially more. This year, we are in the 8.5 billion rand zone. We expect that over the medium term, main budget revenue will be about 27.5% of gross domestic product. We reaffirm the principle that cyclical revenue should not be used to provide permanent tax relief. However, proceeds from better administration and tax compliance and the broadening of the tax base may be used to lower the tax burden as we have done in the past. Now, apart from the medium-term budget policy statement, we also will table today, Madam Speaker, an adjustment appropriation. It's the second that we do this year. The special adjustments budget we tabled in September dealt with urgent transfers for the following items. 1.9 billion rand brought forward from next year into this year to finance the construction of the stadiums for 2010. 2.5 billion rand for the pebble bed modular reactor project. 700 million rand for the land bank. 222 million rand for Denel, and 45 million rand to AlexCore, and then 500 million rand to Centec for wireless broadband infrastructure. Now, in the adjustments appropriation bill we table today, we will include details of amounts rolled over from last year's budget, as well as unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure. These include, firstly, an amount of 654 million rand for expenditure resulting from fires, floods, and other adverse weather conditions. I think we all recall this, what happened to grazing land, forests, etc., a few months ago. 400 million rand for the prevention and treatment of multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis. 744 million rand to support the restructuring of the South African Airways. 1.9 billion rand to accommodate the higher-than-budgeted costs of the 2007 salary agreement. Taking account about 5 billion rand in underspending, total spending amounts to 542 billion rand, about 15.4% more than expenditure in the last fiscal year. The revised estimate for the budget surplus is 10.8 billion rand, which is marginally higher than the 10.7 billion rand that we projected in February. The proposed budget framework for the next 3 years makes provision for about 81 billion rand of additional allocations, allowing for spending on services to rise by 6.4% a year in real terms over the next 3 years. Of this amount, about 15 billion rand goes towards funding the higher cost of the 2007 public service salary agreement. A further 2 billion rand goes to the occupation-specific dispensation proposed for educators and the envisaged dispensation for social workers. Last year, the budget provided 4.6 billion rand for occupation-specific adjustments in the health sector. About 4.3 billion rand over the medium-term expenditure framework period will go towards compensating pensions and social grant beneficiaries for rising food prices and other cost of living increases so that we can maintain the value of social grants. Of the remaining amounts, municipalities receive about 12.6 billion rand to accelerate the pace of delivery of water, sanitation and electricity connections. These resources also cover the additional costs of providing poor households with free basic services. Over the next 3 years, infrastructure transfers to municipalities totaling 57 billion rand, reflecting a firm commitment to sharing the fruits of economic development. This includes a further 2 billion rand for public transport infrastructure and systems. Provinces receive about 36 billion rand, mainly for targeted interventions to improve the quality of schooling, healthcare and welfare services. The proposed budget framework provides for growth in the provincial equitable share of 11.9% a year over the next 3 years. The new estimates of provincial population numbers are taken into account in the allocation of these funds. Several conditional grants are revised upwards. A further 2.1 billion rand goes towards funding the comprehensive HIV and AIDS program. Early learning opportunities and the expansion of grade R are also prioritized because these are programs that improve outcomes in later years. Provision will be made for more places for learners with disabilities and who therefore have particular needs in our schooling system. The school nutrition program receives a further addition to take account of higher food prices and to feed more children for the full school year. Earlier this year, the Minister of Education released a report detailing the state of school facilities. It illustrates considerable progress over the past decade, but also signals very clearly what still needs to be done. Whereas in 1996, 51% of our schools were overcrowded, that figure has now dropped to 24%. The number of schools without electricity has decreased from nearly 14,000 to 4,300. 4,300, too many, we say. schools without adequate water have declined from 8,800 to 3,150. The number of schools with access to computers has increased significantly, but there are still 17,000 schools without them. With these challenges in mind, a further 2.7 billion rand is proposed for school building and maintenance over the MTF period. National departments receive about 33 billion rand of the proposed additional expenditure. Much of this will go to economic infrastructure and services, including a substantial rise in funding in industrial development incentives. We'll also increase spending on fighting crime, improving service delivery in the Department of Home Affairs, and expanding labor-based employment programs. Higher education will benefit from additional allocations in recognition of rising student numbers and the need to boost the financial assistance to students. The 2008 budget framework favors programs that induce efficiency savings in other areas of spending. For example, removing unroadworthy vehicles reduces road accidents, taking pressure off our emergency services and trauma healthcare services. Increasing the number of agricultural extension workers enhances the prospects of successful land reform projects. Allocating resources to the right areas is only half the battle. The 2008 budget framework raises the bar in the quest to improve value for money. In line with the presidency's monitoring and evaluation framework, the Treasury has issued guidelines for the development of performance measures related to each program. The intention is to assist Parliament and the public to hold departments to account for the delivery of key outputs. So let's look beyond how much money there is to what the money buys. As part of the finalizing of the 2008 medium-term expenditure framework, national departments are asked to make about 2.3 billion rands worth of savings as part of an efficiency program. National departments are asked to improve their management of expenditure on travel, entertainment, marketing, catering, events, and consultants. It is anticipated that provincial treasuries will adopt a similar approach in the finalization of their budgets, and these savings will not be taken from departments by the Treasury, but will be reprioritized towards frontline services. Now, Madam Speaker, I pause for applause at this stage. Thank you. It's welcome. And so spontaneous. It's really beautiful. Madam Speaker, this budget framework and the related economic policy proposals provide a clear platform for investment in the infrastructure and services that are likely to raise our growth path towards 6%. About 20 billion rand of the additional amounts go towards capital formation, signaling a continuation of the drive towards broadening access to basic services and increasing economic efficiency. Allocations for targeted salary increases are related to performance systems presently being implemented in the public service. And let me say, for fear of being very unpopular, this excludes the members of Parliament. On the basis of sound fiscal and economic policies, we have made significant progress in improving the quality of life of all South Africans, but particularly those in poverty. With the right policies in place and through steady improvements in building implementation capacity and monitoring service delivery, we can accelerate progress in transforming the lives of all South Africans. Madam Speaker, 10 years ago this month, the South African Revenue Service Act was promulgated to give effect to a key element of our public finance reforms, and that is the creation of an administratively independent, efficient and effective Revenue and Customs Authority that would be able to fund our spending objectives in a sustainable way. Since those chaotic days, the Revenue Service has evolved into an organization respected and admired across the world. SARS has been at the center of a series of tax administrative and organizational reforms that have completely changed our relationships with taxpayers. A key element of the social contract between government and citizens is that paying one's fair share of taxes is essential to all of our futures, and that revenue collection is as much about a better service to the public as it is about enforcement. It is this virtuous circle which lies at the heart of our fiscal policy and at the heart of SARS' unyielding drive to promote compliance by providing ever higher service levels, greater simplicity, and the ease of access to honest taxpayers. Madam Speaker, none of us needs reminding of the unrelenting vigor, dedication, and passion of Commissioner Pravin Gordhan and the 15,000 men and women who work for the Revenue Service. Today, as we congratulate the management and staff of SARS for 10 years of dedicated service, we must also thank South African taxpayers, individuals and companies alike, for their contribution to our nation's development. And the Commissioner has asked me, in the light of the spirit of celebrations, to mention that tomorrow is the deadline for tax returns. Madam Speaker, we are close to the high point of our year as hosts of the G20. In just 3 weeks, we host the finance ministers and central bank governors from the 19 systemically most significant economies and the European Union as the 20th party just outside of Cape Town. This meeting follows a series of consultations dealing with the issues of fiscal space and how to use it, the impact of commodity prices and the reform of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. We've also used our tenure as chair of the G20 to bring African finance ministries into a dialogue with the more developed countries on issues of development. I'd like to thank colleagues in Cabinet, and in particular the members of the Ministers' Committee of the Budget, for their role in crafting this policy statement. Thanks too to the staff of Statistics South Africa, the Ministry of Finance and the National Treasury. Madam Speaker, I hereby table the 2007/8 Adjustments Appropriation Bill, the Adjusted Estimates of National Revenue, and the Medium-Term Budget Policy Statement for consideration by Parliament. I thank you.